Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios in the Bustos Media Center here in central Tucson. The Buckmaster Radio Show off and running midweek edition, December 10th, 2025. Bill Buckmaster along with Brendan Kraft. Hey, Brendan, how are you?
Doing good. Ready to get this show going.
Yeah, let's get this show going. Got some great bump music already lined up. Brendan, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass. 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We'll have our live line presented, and I'm so glad that they've been a great sponsor and will continue to be with our work in 2026 as we transition to a Friday-only show. So that's still a lot of shows, Brendan. I was just counting up the Fridays. Yeah. It's like 55 shows.
Yeah, it's still a commitment.
Yeah, we're going to be around in 2026. It's Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our sponsor for our live line. Once a month, pretty much for the last 15 years, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham has been coming into the studio, or we've talked to him on the phone if he can't make it to the studio, but he did make it today, and we're glad he did. Councilman, how are you? What a year this has been.
It's been an amazing year, and it is absolutely, it's coming to an end, and it's just been filled with so many different good and bads, highs and lows, and yeah, I've been reflecting on it quite a bit between Thanksgiving and the holidays and the new year.
Well, what before we talk about the busy council meeting next week, just some personal things, Paul. We've known each other a long time, and I know there's been a tough year for you. I'm just curious about those reflections, if you would care to share those with the public. You're a pretty transparent guy.
I think maybe it
could help everybody.
We've been on the show a lot.
Yeah.
And I've talked about my dad in the past, so I don't really need to rehash that, but that's a process for everybody. But think about all the other folks that we've lost in the community over the year. In this last 2 weeks, we've had two incidents with federal law enforcement taking actions that divides our community. We've had some situations here in the city where public safety, the attitude towards public safety is poor, and that people don't feel safe. We've had some things happen this year that kind of made us all question, you know, how Tucson's going to be effective. But then there's some other good things. We finally had a joint meeting between the county and the city. Mm-hmm. We've had some positive discussions there. I think there's some room to move the needle. Mm-hmm. I think TUSD's override passing was a really big deal. They were one of the only districts in the state without an override. Mm-hmm. And as a guy who's put three children through TUSD, or it's currently putting, and as a product of TUSD, I think that district right now is on the climb. Mm-hmm. I think there's some nice turnaround we're seeing mm-hmm. with that school district. It used to be kind of a punchline, and right now you've got some really good high schools thriving. You've got some schools getting some A's and keeping some A's, which is really hard to do. It's easy to move up to mm-hmm. a B or an A. It's harder to keep that B or A, and so we're seeing that. So those are some things. On the sports side, great year for the Wildcats. Mm-hmm. That football team, Coach Brennan really got the kids bought in, and he's done a tremendous job, and we should be grateful for that.
Yeah, I think they're on track maybe to win 10 games. I think the matchup with SMU in the Holiday Bowl is really good. They could win 10 games, and then the Wildcat basketball team, the number one team in the nation, and they certainly, I would be very surprised that if they don't make the Final Four.
Well, I mean, the Final Four is still a function of luck to some degree.
I know.
It's very nice to feel like winners here in Tucson.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah.
There's some other things we can do. There's tweaks and dials that we can turn and things yeah. like that to try to get our community where we want it to be. We're closer there.
Let's go back to the public safety piece. You had an encounter with a shoplifter.
Yeah,
that was part of.
It was
the
a crazy. I mean, it went back and forth for days about whether I did the right thing or wrong thing, and some people were pretty disappointed in me. Some people were really happy with me, and that just shows how divided we are on some of the attitudes. The bottom line for me is that long term, we need more police.
Yeah, and most I don't know. I can't say most, but tons of people that believe that public safety. More cops should be the number one thing that you and your colleagues should be dealing with.
So I had this conversation this morning about there's always a tipping point. And one of the tipping points for me is like 1,000 officers. I'd really like us to get to 1,000 officers to some degree. And if it becomes a situation where it's 925 commissioned and some extra CSOs, I can live with that depending on how many units we'd have rolling in different patrols, but there's certain things there that I think are important. And so we've got to meet those tipping points. The other piece is that that's how we build our revenue, whether or not we ever get to $1 billion in the general fund or whether or not, we had Project Blue this year. There's another one that just the entire community kind of united against. I feel a little bit vindicated because it sounds to me like Beal's kind of redirecting what they're saying, and so they didn't really have all the deals that they said they did in the first place. And I told you on this show,
yeah, you did. You said that
we just couldn't trust them.
No, you said you couldn't trust them,
and now they've changed their story. What,
four
times?
Changes, right? I know. So that was, of course, a big piece as we review this year. And let's go to this meeting. Public safety is going to come up Tuesday, isn't it?
A little bit. I mean, the bus safety plan's coming up.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to vote on the bus safety plan. So for me, it's really hard because I want to support the drivers who are asking for some bus safety, but throwing $500,000 for police overtime for three officers to run on 160 buses that are operating at a time, I don't know if that's going to make the dent we think it's going to make.
Sky Marshal program that they will wind up on certain routes?
I haven't gotten briefed on all the details on how it's going to work, but I know that I feel like we're arbitrarily throwing money at the issue, and what we're not doing is we don't have any modicum to regulate who gets on and off the bus. And I think that's part of the issue for me. I think that's a big piece. So so there's one of them. The other one we have this week is we're obviously facing a budget deficit. It's no big secret that in the general fund, and there's a series of taxes that we're going to pass on the consent agenda. I wouldn't be surprised if all those are pulled off the consent agenda and we do them one at a time. There's some of them that are pretty reasonable revenue sources that I can get behind, but when we're really talking about the issue of affordability for Tucsonans, and we hear all the time about our utility tax, and we hear all the time about our sales tax. Like, we have the RTA coming up in March. Phoenix recently passed a new tax. So Phoenix now has a 9.1% sales tax, and it has an 8.1% sales tax on food. Phoenix does. Phoenix,
really?
Arizona. Yeah. And so we have
on
no
food?
Sale. Yeah. We have no sales tax on food.
Right.
All right. And then we have.
Thank goodness.
I might have misspoke. It might be like 1 penny on food. Let me double check that. I don't think the state 6 cents is supposed to be backed out. I'll check into that. But the bottom line is they have a 9.1 sales tax, and they do have a sales tax on food. We do not have a sales tax on food, and we only have an 8.67% sales tax. If the RTA fails, we go all the way down to 8.1%. We'll be lower than most of the other states. And then over the years, we took a lot of – well, the county has taken a lot of flack about the high property taxes. Again, different counties are charging a little bit more and more. So there's some interesting platitudes that exist where people don't feel that they feel that they're taxed too much here in Tucson, and that may not be the case anymore. Mm-hmm. We used to be on the higher end, but I don't know if we are. I think another thing that's going to come up during this meeting is we're gonna have a discussion about. We're going to have a discussion about the middle housing program. And the staff has recommended that the middle housing go all the way to Wilmot, which is 3 or 4 or 5 miles off the required of the state requirement. And they have drawn some very historic neighborhoods out, and that's a good thing, but there's a couple that are left in. I think there's some discussion there. I think
what
that'll
is
be a
middle
pretty,
housing?
Middle housing means that you can build, if you own a single family residence, you'd right. be allowed to build a triplex in your backyard
really?
And make it into a four person apartment complex.
Wow.
And you can do that automatically.
Wow.
Now, right now, it's actually not as big a difference as people would think, because right now, by state law, most single family residents are allowed to build what's called two ADUs, which are accessory dwelling units. So most people can do that anyway. You can build a guest house and another guest house and either rent them out or whatever. But this would allow you to just build a triplex in your backyard, which again, or scrape your entire property and build two duplexes mm-hmm. or whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And it would be arbitrary. It wouldn't matter what you're zoned in what neighborhood if you're in this zone. And so that's for some of the folks who've spent years and years and years protecting the neighborhood that they moved into.
Yeah.
It's a little alarming. Now look, the other piece is that a lot of people say there's a shortage in housing, and we definitely are in a housing crisis, but I don't know if it's about inventory. I think it's about pricing and affordability. I know that there are some of our operators of multifamily that are running at, 15 to 20% vacancy. And I know that we have a bunch of Airbnbs in town that are no longer used as residences. And we keep running around saying we have to build more and more. And I'm not sure if it's okay to want to build housing because we want to meet the national housing need. It's okay to want to build housing because it puts people to work. There's all kinds of reasons to build housing. But to say that we're 100% in a shortage, I believe is a little bit insincere. I think we have made it so unaffordable that a lot of people have given up trying to get housing, and we've got to bring that back in. We've got to figure out a way to get folks in. A lot of people say we want the economy to grow, and we've actually grown the economy rather substantially. The biggest thing is that I want the number of people, I want our families and our people who live here in Tucson, I don't care. Of course, I want them to make more money, but what I want really is important is how much leftover money they have. It doesn't matter. If you make more money, but the cost of living goes up higher than what you made, your number of the discretionary income goes down. Mm-hmm. Discretionary income is a big piece to our quality of life. Think about how people walk taller. Think about how people feel more confident, more comfortable. They're less stressed if they actually know they have some discretionary money, if they know that there's some type of
It takes a huge stress away from it. You've got enough stress these days.
I'm not saying that money it causes problems, mm-hmm. but it can. Not having money can definitely make little problems worse. So,
all right.
Anyway, that's my
okay. Paul
rant.
Cunningham sticks around for segment number two. Right now, Mona's Danish Bakery is taking orders for Christmas. What would you like on your Christmas dessert list, Paul Cunningham? Would you like a pumpkin pie, a cherry pie, a cream pie? What do you want?
Chocolate cream and apple, man.
Ooh.
With the cinnamon.
Ooh, wow.
One chocolate cream, one apple, not mixed together.
Of course not. All right. What about a Danish Kringle on Christmas morning or Christmas Eve morning? Ooh. That'd be nice.
Only if it's from Mona's.
Yeah, all right. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. They're open 7 o'clock Tuesday through Sunday. Stop by and say hello to Steve and the team at Mona's. We'll be right back, Buckmaster, on a midweek edition. Be right back with Paul Cunningham.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
A proposed $2.67 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 48,000 additional jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
What is this? Midnight by the Swing Rovers. What the heck?
It's called Electric Swing.
Very nice. Brendan Kraft on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show, which in less than 3 weeks, Brendan, we gear up for the new kind of revamped Friday show. We'll keep certainly newsmaker interviews, but we may not do just one newsmaker interview, maybe a couple in a show. But we'll still have the Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive and bringing in a media person. So I'm excited about it.
So am I, you know, much more focused program.
It's focused, and the reaction, I announced it on Facebook officially yesterday. And it's real. People have said some really nice things. And it just it's very humbling. Paul Cunningham is here, Tucson City Councilman, Ward 2, Democrat. So we've got 2026 coming up. There's so many challenges this city is facing. Again, I go back to people, the perception is this is not a safe city. And every time the chief is with us on our Friday focus interview, he says it's just not true.
Well, I mean,
overall, it's still, he believes, a safe city.
Well, statistically, he's got some facts to back that up. Yeah. If you compare us to different peer cities, there's definitely, the numbers are pretty flat on stuff like that. I think the perception comes to visibility. I think the perception comes to, we've had some high profile attacks, which seem to be less,
Which centered around bus stops.
So that definitely made a bit, that's caused quite a stir. So that's kind of really the piece of that discussion. But as far as retail theft, as far as bike theft, like, so when I came on the council the first time, our number one issue was bicycle theft. It was our biggest, we had more bicycle theft than any other city. And when bikists kind of came to fruition, like fully, and pretty much anybody who needed a bike could get a bike for free.
Yeah.
You stopped seeing a lot of the bike. That was really the bigger cure for the bike theft than anything else. Now there are some high profile bikes that get stolen for resale, but that's a little bit more of an organized crime. I remember we had a really high burglary rate right after, during the Great Recession, with the invention of Ring and the invention of home and invention of all that other, you know, that changes. We were a car theft city in the 2000s, and that changed with garages and smart cars. And I mean, so all those things kind of, you can look at numbers and look at changes. The best way I think to do it is to compare us to our peer cities. Our peer cities are the cities that have an MSA and a municipality similar to ours, both in demographics and economic drivers.
Like
and
Albuquerque
population.
Or El Paso.
Albuquerque, El Paso, Fresno, Tulsa. Mm-hmm. I'm missing one. Mm. There's Stockton, California. They're the ones that are like just low hanging fruit. They're just like they're like us. And if you go through those cities and town, oh, Birmingham, Alabama, that's another one that's, they have a military installation, they have a university, they have a defense contractor, and they have anywhere between 800 to 1.2 million people in the metropolitan statistical area.
Paul, can you take a quick question here that came in on my Facebook page? What about ICE? Some people feel ICE is making us less safe. And what does Paul, the question is, what does Paul think of TPD helping out ICE after they were the ones hurting the community? This is the question.
I think that's a great question. And the first answer I have is, the way I understand it is that TPD is not helping ICE. They come in with their warrants and kind of report what they want to do. Our officers are only there to make sure that the conflict between the community members and the ICE officers doesn't escalate. So I'm under the impression that police are not complicit in helping ICE. I don't think so. As far as what I think of ICE, I don't think we need any type of like Trump goons and like Gestapo type tactics anywhere in the United States at all. And I'm not a big fan of zero transparency and zero accountability for any law enforcement agency, specifically with the way they're conducting themselves now. So I can say that on the record. I'm very comfortable saying that on the record. I don't think it's even, if they're coming under the guise of doing warrants for criminal trespass, human trafficking and narcotic trafficking, and then we find out 2 days later the story changes and there's not some consistency, and the only seven arrests they made were seven people with allegedly without papers, and one of them happens to be someone who's been here for 17 years and built a whole life. So that's the stuff that just, we can't have those. That's not what the United States is all about. So we've got to be careful with that. But I will say that in both situations, I haven't seen the full-on unencumbered ICE squad yet, but I think these two incidents today are kind of a prelude to that. The one that this weekend where we got our congresswoman pepper sprayed, and then the one this morning over on Miracle Mile, I think that's a prelude. So I don't think that ICE is, I don't think ICE and TPD are simpatico and doing the and on the same page. Mm-hmm.
Okay, in our remaining time, what's the big issue going to be then? Well, RTA will be a huge issue. How are you feeling? You've been around a lot. Gut feeling?
I hope we can get this done.
How do you get it over the goal line?
Well, the one thing you could tell people is, look, we have a lower sales tax in Phoenix. Even if we continue it, and the sales tax isn't going up, it's staying exactly the same. So I think that's pretty important. I think that's something that I totally believe. On the other side, man, we have so many different things, but really, I'm going to go to the other thing on Friday and check out George Hammond's report. You guys remember when Marshall Vest used to do it? But George Hammond's been doing it actually for a decade.
Yeah,
and he does a really good job. And he's going to give us an economic outlook. I don't know if the Fed rate cut happened or not, so I can't speak on whether or not economically what the good signs and bad signs are. What I will say is right now, I think there's been an uptake in foreclosures, which worries me. So there's some stuff that I'm just trying to watch the economic trends the best I can as an elected official and as a community leader, just to see kind of where we're going to be economically.
The Fed did lower the interest rate again today.
Interesting. So I don't know what that does to our sales tax projections. We were really conservative at the beginning of the year, and we were projecting a really, really high deficit. how the holiday season does and how that really affects what our general fund looks like next year. But that's the big thing, is balancing the budget and being able to add some police. And then again, figuring out a way, nobody's really figured out a way to on a macro level, bring some of these housing costs down. And that to me is probably the number one thing I'm looking at with what type of things we implement next year.
We had the ASU economist, Dr. Dennis Hoffman yesterday. He said that the hiring is just so iffy still. People are worried about tariffs and just question marks.
But the other thing is that between the feds and the state, we've created this atmosphere where we have way too many jobs out there that are listed that are what I call 24/15 jobs. Mm-hmm. They're only offered for 24. They're only offered part-time 24 hours a week for $15 an hour.
Yeah, then no benefits.
Yeah, you can't live on that in Tucson. Yeah.
No, you really can't. A few seconds left. Some your closing remarks.
Well, I just want to tell everyone in Tucson to have a great holiday and to enjoy their families and to reconnect with people that they've either had falling out with or they're discussing. We've had these different discussions every year about how I'm not talking to my family anymore because of politics and stuff like that.
Yeah,
we need to go back to enjoying each other and putting our disagreements aside. If we can get out of our comfort level a bit and start that dialogue again, where people who don't disagree on a lot of things can find common ground, we're going to be ahead of some other cities. That's what I'm saying.
We'll look forward to talking to you
Merry Christmas,
on our
everybody.
Friday show. Thank you very much, Paul Cunningham. Coming up next, Will Humble is in the house. We've talked to him on the phone for years up in Phoenix, and he's actually going to be with me in studio in just a few seconds. Well, a few minutes. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel Advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. If you have not started your holiday decorating, may I suggest a visit to Jan and Jack, the owners at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. They have the largest selection of poinsettias in Arizona. They also have the largest selection of pottery at their Zocalo Village, which is part of the 13-acre site over there. And we had a great relationship with Jan and Jack that will continue. When we do our Friday show starting January 2nd, we'll be on Fridays only. This will still be the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Also, I'll be doing a monthly podcast about gardening at Green Things. So that's going to be great that they'll have up on their website. So a lot of changes coming for me and the Buckmaster Show, but bottom line is I'm still going to be here and out and about and here in the studio and serving folks. That's kind of what I've always tried to be about, public service with my broadcast career. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. When we do our telephone interviews, Sean McCluskey and his team at Rincon Ventures, my goodness, they've been very good to me. They're staying on board for our Friday show. And, you know, it's so gratifying that these people who've been with me, Will Humble is with me in studio, former Arizona health director. Will, it's just been gratifying that, you know, people have heard I'm going to make a change, sort of step away from the daily show and do the just Friday only. And I get these emails, count me in, Bill, these longtime sponsors. So, you know, it's really, doesn't it? First of all, Will, it is so good to see you in person rather than on the phone. But whether you're in health, which you've been in, isn't it always about relationships?
Oh, everything. A lot of my gig right now is advocacy, trying to get the legislature, the state agencies to make better decisions. And relationships with state legislators, with people that are influential and, you know, appointees of various administrations. That is what makes advocacy work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also what makes, you know, communications work.
Right.
I mean, we've been doing this gig 15 years, I
probably,
think.
Probably.
When I was in the director job, that was,
yeah.
I left that 10 years ago. Well, we were doing it when I was in that
so
director.
So it's been year after year, month after month, and it's been wonderful. And this is the first time that Will has had the opportunity to come back to Tucson and be on the show. And we hope we'll have him in studio for the new reconstituted show sometime in 2026. But Will, by the way, we do want to say what Will does, you know, now. You mentioned he was the director of health services for the state of Arizona for 6 years. But right now, he's executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, and that is about relationships and dealing with a lot of people. And you like to do guest lectures. You're going to do some this afternoon here in Tucson, but you grew up here over on 22nd Street. You had a swamp cooler like everybody
right.
else back in the 60s. When I came out here to go to the U of A in the 60s from Chicago, everybody had swamp coolers. Air conditioning was a luxury back in the 60s. But you've carried the tradition on up in the valley, which is really, I don't know, that's kind of iffy.
No, it works great in April, May, and the first part of June. Then my wife gets hot, and we have to switch. And yeah. then I get another month and a half in late September, all through October.
But if you keep those swamp cooler pads, you know, up to date and everything like that, it really is nice. It puts some nice humidity into the air, into the house.
Yeah, that's what I like, and my wife especially likes the humidity part of it. It's easier to sleep.
Right.
You know, and even in June, you could get, like, you know, humidity's up 50% and the air temperature in the room is 66 or something like that. Like, that's great sleeping temp.
Yeah.
You can't get that with a regular heat pump, you know?
No. Let's talk about this flu season. When you were on last month, I had mentioned there's some kind of a new, I don't know, every year, doesn't there seem to be some kind of new strain? What are we hearing about the flu and the flu shots?
Yeah, so when so you have to make a decision about what's in your annual flu shot in actually in March. Mm-hmm. And that because you have to grow the vaccine in chicken eggs. And it's a long, long process. So to get the vaccine ready in September, you have to start and make your decision in March. The problem with that lead time is that the Southern Hemisphere has their winter in between in our summer.
Right.
And that's where these strains of influenza can mutate. It's like COVID in a way. Mm-hmm. It mutates and it tries to escape, you know, the immunity from previous years. And this year, there's a new, it's not a pandemic or anything. It's still H3N2 is going to be the dominant strain. But in the Southern Hemisphere, a new, it's something called subclade K. That's the technical term for it. But it popped up in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Australia, New Zealand, and that kind of stuff. And then it's moved, and that is going to be the dominant strain. The issue is it's new, so it wasn't fully covered in the vaccine that's you could see in the pharmacies today. So the estimate is that the influenza vaccine, which I'm going to get this weekend, is about it's going to be 70% effective in kids and about 50% effective in adults in terms of preventing infection entirely.
But if you got it, it'll always reduce the symptoms. If you got it, it would reduce the symptoms.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, across the board, it reduces symptoms. Yeah. And so it's still a good thing to get. I'm definitely going to get it. My wife, my kid, we're going to go down to the pharmacy and get it this weekend. Mm-hmm. So that's the story on that, the new strain. It's not a wild, out-of-the-blue thing like H1N1 was back in 2009. It is where we are. Now, if we could get a messenger RNA vaccine, which is it's actually in a clinical trial right now, you could reduce that 8-month lead time to more like up 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then we could actually produce a vaccine that would include subclade K and give that better protection. So within 5 years, I think we'll see messenger RNA vaccines that will avoid the kinds of problems that we're going to see this fall.
And the COVID products, the vaccines are messenger derivatives.
Most of them are. Novavax is the traditional vaccine.
I don't know anybody that has had that.
But the CVS by my house has all three. So
really?
Moderna, Pfizer, and Novavax.
Yeah.
You can look at your pharmacy and click on it.
Why would you want that one?
Well, there's some people that are just prejudiced against messenger RNA out there. Yeah. So that's probably the biggest group. But other people just want to mix it up. You know, like I might try Novavax this year. I've done Moderna and Pfizer over I think I've had 7 of them.
Yeah.
If they have Novavax this year, I'll try that. Not because I don't trust the other
one. And this is something I brought up with you on the phone a couple of months back. I did have my second bout with COVID in the summer. And I tried to research this, and I know you weighed in on this. You said to wait about 6 months.
Yeah.
So I think in January, I'll be about ready.
Yeah. 6 months is the guideline.
Yeah, so I started as a Moderna person, then transitioned when it wasn't so readily available. But you think it might be a good idea to mix it up?
I'm just doing it because I like variety. There's no actual reason.
Okay, there's not been no studies on that.
No, but like I do a lot of media stuff, and so I want to be able to say, hey, you know, this was my experience with the Novavax.
Right, right. Okay, what about Secretary Kennedy, what's the latest controversy? And I think it goes back to the whole measles thing, right?
Well, the biggest one is really on hepatitis B last week.
Yeah, you're right.
So hepatitis B is it's a viral infection that you can get. It's for the most part a bloodborne pathogen, not exclusively, but for the most part, blood-to-blood contact. And once you're infected with hepatitis B, you have it for life. So it's not like, you know, with influenza, for example, you get the infection, you know, you're miserable for a few days. Hopefully you don't get pneumonia or something like that. And, you know, by a week to 10 days, you've totally recovered and you won't get that strain of influenza again because you're done with it. Hepatitis B is a lifelong infection and it attacks your liver. Mm-hmm. And over the course of a decade or two or three decades, it can actually ruin your liver. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a big priority of public health to vaccinate newborns as soon as they're born. Mm-hmm. It to make sure that they don't get infected from their mom. Because if the mom had a hepatitis B infection, even if her exposure was 20 years ago,
right,
that blood from the birth canal infects the baby, and then the baby has hepatitis B for life. So we've had a universal recommendation for the last 25, 30 years to give that birth dose of hepatitis B, and it's dropped the number of hepatitis B infections dramatically in the U.S. So Kennedy's advisory committee last week made a change to that recommendation saying, hey, for a certain class of moms, moms who we know are negative, we're going to say, hey, you don't need to get that. Your baby doesn't need that hepatitis B dose. And on its face, like, I actually don't have a super, I know there's other public health people and doctors and stuff who hate that decision.
If the mom, though, is negative.
If it's the mom is a known negative, then, you know, push that first vaccine dose back a couple of months. I don't have a huge problem with it. The biggest problem with it, honestly, is there's about a 3% false negative rate. So the mom could test negative. And out of 100 of them, three of them are actually going to be positive. So
yeah, why not err on the safe side?
Right. And that's what we've been doing. And it gets that. And plus, the other thing is, like, the vaccine's been studied over and over and over and over, and it's super safe, and there's no, you know, there's no safety signals. Yeah. So, so it makes no public sense to change this. Mm. But my bigger concern is that the process that committee used and now uses is more ad hoc. It's not disciplined. It doesn't use evidence reviews or systematic reviews to inform the decisions. And I just see this trend happening over the next 3 years as Kennedy is the secretary, where we're going to see this committee continue to make more and more decisions without using evidence to drive those decisions. And this Hep B thing is bad, but it's not catastrophic. But I could see down the horizon this committee making some catastrophic decisions right. with respect to vaccines. This one isn't. This Hep B one, in my opinion, isn't. You're going to find people that say it is. But I like to keep my credibility and like call it like it is and not over exaggerate stuff.
All right. Will Humble, we'll stick around for segment number four. Will is the former director for the Arizona Health Department. And by the way, ADHS has a new director. Is it Debbie?
Debbie Johnston.
Yeah. Do you know her?
Oh, I've known her for 25 years.
And she has been nominated, correct?
Correct. And she's been on the job a week now.
For your old post. So she was approved then by the legislature or no?
No. She's been nominated by Governor Hobbs, and she still needs to get Senate confirmation this fall. But I think in this case, I think she will. You remember what happened to Dr.
Course.
Cullen. I don't think that's going to happen to Debbie Johnston. I mean, her CV, her resume, her work experience is at the Hospital Association, basically trying to get out of regulations, and now she's going to have to pivot to being the regulator.
Yeah,
I think she could do that. She's a smart cookie, and I like her. So I think she'll, if she can make that pivot and become a regulator, coming from a deregulatory background, I think we're going to see some good work out of her.
All right, we'll take a break right here. 81 Special by Caravan Palace is right. Our bump music. Go ahead, Brendan.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Attend an upcoming question and answer session hosted by the Regional Transportation Authority. To learn more about the proposed $2.67 billion regional transportation plan, voters will consider next March. The proposed improvements, if approved, will reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. A half-cent tax to fund RTA Next, if approved, will replace the current tax, resulting in no change in the current tax rate. The Q&A sessions, which are being held across the region, include in-person and virtual events. Learn more or sign up at RTANext.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We send a lot of our listeners over to New Mexico, Silver City in Grant County. My lovely fiance and I spent pretty much Thanksgiving week over in New Mexico. What a beautiful state. Will Humble is with me in studio, former Arizona Director of Health. It's interesting, Will, you cross the state line. By the time you're in southern New Mexico and then up to central New Mexico, it just feels different.
Oh, yeah. I know you run ads and stuff here and talk about it all the time, but it is actually a pretty well-kept secret. So when you get there, it's overrun.
Silver City. It's not like Santa Fe, which is overrun in many cases.
No, it's tourists. Nothing like that.
It's Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico, very low-key, really a cool place to kind of hang out, a lot of Victorian architecture. Start your planning now, southwestnewmexico.org. And that's another one of our fine sponsors that said, count us in when the Friday show starts January 2nd. Will Humble is here, and Will is with, he's the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's been involved with public health for 40 years. Is that about right? Or no?
Maybe even a little more. I started inspecting restaurants in 84.
Mm-hmm.
So, 41.
Generally in Arizona, are restaurants inspected on a regular basis?
Yes. In Maricopa County and Pima County, it's usually 3 to 4 times a year.
Unannounced?
It's supposed to be unannounced. but they anticipate it. You know, like it's been 3 months, they kind of, the inspector's going to be here. So they kind of know that. Some of the counties have a lot more struggles with getting staff. And so for some of the rural counties, it might be just once or twice a year.
Okay, we've got two major topics to take care of in the next 5 minutes. This report on child fatalities, bottom line.
Yeah. So there's been a child fatality review report for the last 32 years, and it's been really helpful in figuring out ways that we can keep kids safe and alive. And so there's a whole group of folks across the state that look at every child death and try to figure out, okay, was this a preventable death? And if it was a preventable death, like what kinds of things could have prevented that death? Year in and year out, the biggest thing is really prematurity. And the intervention, meaning babies born too young, maybe weighing 3, 4 pounds and that. And that, obviously causes a lot of infant deaths because they're such preemie kids. And the intervention there is preconception health. It's like getting moms, pregnant women, to get to their appointments, keep all their prenatal care appointments, and then get the blood draws and all the tests along the way. And then better, good physical activity, nutrition, checking for, you know, gestational diabetes and that kind of stuff. And so that's really the primary intervention there. Another biggie is still safe sleep environment.
I was just going to say the crib deaths.
That's right. And this.
That's horrible when that. Oh.
Yeah. And so, you know, the message is when you have a baby, I know, especially if you're breastfeeding, it's tempting to bring the baby into bed with you. Yeah. It's easier for mom, the baby, but it results in a lot of suffocation deaths.
Oh, gosh.
And so the only real safe way to do it is to have a crib. It could be in parents' room. That's actually a good idea, but make sure there's no stuffed animals in there, that it's, you know, it's just a nice solid mattress and that, and they put baby on their back to sleep.
Okay.
Put them on their back.
Good.
So that's the big intervention there.
How about our other topic that's very important about these work requirements concerning Medicaid?
Yeah. So a year from now, our state Medicaid agency Access will be implementing a work requirement as part of the federal bill, H.R. 1, that passed Congress and the president signed a few months ago. That's going to require all the state Medicaid agencies to have a work or community engagement requirement. And so one of the things that I've been really pressing is for our state Medicaid agency Access to really get their ducks in a row and get their computer systems all set up and working, because, you know, most people are going to be able to meet these work requirements. Most Medicaid members are working, and people with disabilities would be exempt from the requirements. But you're going to have to prove to the agency that you're in community college, you're in school, like that you're looking for a job and how you're looking for it. Mm. And if they don't have a good computer system in place that allows people to easily document and demonstrate to Access that they're meeting the requirements, we could see a lot of people lose their Medicaid requirements. Even though they're meeting the work requirements, they're going to lose their coverage. So I've worked in state government a long, long time. It takes a long time to get a computer code written properly and tested so that you know it works on Edge, Chrome, Safari, on the different browsers. So that's my biggest concern, is not the work requirements per se, but whether our Access is going to actually make a computer system that allows people to easily report that they're meeting those work requirements.
All right. I want to bring up another topic real quickly. What are we going to do about this shortage of primary care physicians? So many in this community have decided to retire, quit, or for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's two things. Number one, there's a lot of people who go into medical school liking the idea of being primary care. It's a great job. It's a lot of, you make a huge difference. They save more lives than surgeons. Surgeons get all the accolades and everything and the thank yous. Primary care finds the blood pressure 30 years before your stroke and stops it.
Right.
So that those are the people that save lives. But the thing of it is primary care doesn't pay as much as being a surgeon or an OBGYN or a ENT or something like that.
Perhaps 50% less.
Yes. And so the costs of these medical schools drive up for the students that have to borrow money. They can have $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 worth of debt by the time they're done with medical school. And then when it comes time to decide what they're going to do for their residencies and specialists, then they'll choose, you know, a high paying profession, a specialist. And I'm not saying we don't need specialists, but the real shortage is with frontline.
Yeah.
So we've got to bring down the price of that. And the second thing is we need a lot more residency slots for primary care.
All right, Will Humble, I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season, and we'll look forward to maybe getting you in the studio on a Friday, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I've enjoyed this 15-year
run.
It's
been terrific. We've had a great run, and you've been a terrific contributor on public health, and we look forward to continuing with our relationships. Thanks, Will.
My pleasure.
All right, on behalf of Will and our buddy Brendan Kraft, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster with you, back with you in about 23 hours.